At Syracuse University. Democracy Now! Is produced by a remarkable group of people. Mike Berkman, Nate Felt, Sarah Mate, Nirmin Shaikh, Steve Martinez, and Malkoff, Hani Masood, Rabbi.
At 89.3 FM.
This is member supported.
WPFW, Washington.
Good evening. My name's Garland Nixon. You're listening to WPFW 89.3 FM here in Washington, D.C. The name of the show is News Views on every Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. airing directly after Democracy Now! It's a great show. Of course, I would say that I am the host, but we have a lot of good guests on here. We have serious subjects, and we try to get you involved, and we give our views, and we certainly want to hear yours too. I'm going to give out the number, and hopefully straggling on the line there with me now is one Mr. Mark Levine. Are you there, Mark?
I'm here, sir.
Just as I suspected. And we've got lots to talk about tonight. We've got to talk about certainly there are a number of things. We've got the a myriad of Supreme Court decisions, well, roughly two, but we'll call two a myriad for tonight because it kind of sounds good. And we've got Paula Deen. We've got lots of things happening. So we're going to start. Let's start at the bottom and work our way up. Of course, I could call it. So let's do this, Mark. For those of you who don't know and haven't listened, Mark is a lawyer. And what we want to do is start off by clarifying these decisions and exactly what they mean, so that for some of our guests, I'm sure there are a lot of people who listen to the news and watch the news and hear a lot of people glossing over the issues, but they may not quite understand the importance of these decisions and exactly what they mean. So Mark, let's just start with the two major decisions. Let's start with the DOMA decision, Defense of Marriage Act decision. Explain it to our guests kind of in layman's term, what it was about and what it means.
Sure. In 1996, before any state in the United States had marriage equality, allowing same-sex couples to marry, Congress passed a law that would prohibit states that did allow gay couples to marry from giving them federal marriage rights. When you get married, there's about 2,000 civil rights that the state and federal governments confer upon you.
Mm-hmm.
And the state gives you about 1,000 of them, and the federal government gives you about 1,000 of them. The federal rights would include things like filing joint income tax returns, spousal benefits for Social Security, mm-hmm. and being able to participate, for example, in Obamacare as a couple, or Medicaid, or Medicare, just about any government, federal government program. It also has certain benefits in the sense that if you are a federal officer and you're harmed, it also does a crime to harm the spouse of a federal officer. So things like that. There's also responsibilities, I should say. Remember, because both your income is taken into account with your benefits. So it's not always a positive thing. But the point is it changes your life in about 1,000 state ways and 1,000 federal ways. So what DOMA did, the Defense of Marriage Act, is it said that even if Massachusetts and the District of Columbia and Maryland allow gay couples to marry, they will have state rights, but they won't have federal rights. So the Supreme Court said that it's unequal, it's unfair to say that, for example, residents of the District of Columbia or Maryland, that gay couples there were promised by the state of Maryland and the District of Columbia government that they would have the same marriage as anybody else. But in fact, the federal government was forcing Maryland and D.C. to discriminate against their own people based on sexual orientation, and they said that doesn't make any sense. So by a 5-4 decision, very close decision, four liberals plus Justice Kennedy, they ruled that the Defense of Marriage Act was unconstitutional.
So for those who may ask, why would a conservative majority vote in favor of a suit that was intended to expand the rights of gay and lesbian people, it sounds to me as though their answer would be they kind of. It came down to an extent. It kind of came down to states' rights, didn't it?
Well, sort of. I want be very clear. There are five conservative justices. This is four liberal justices, four justices appointed by either Barack Obama or Bill Clinton. In this case, four of the five conservatives did vote against gay rights. All four liberals voted for gay rights. So really, the question is, why did Justice Kennedy vote with the liberals? Because the other four conservatives voted the way we might expect, against gay rights. And the answer is that Kennedy is more of a libertarian, I would argue, than a typical conservative Republican.
Okay.
A libertarian generally wants the government not to interfere with your life. Kennedy, for example, opposed Obamacare, called it unconstitutional, because that's sort of government interference. But a strict libertarian supports civil rights for gay people because they say, you know, hey, government, don't discriminate against a certain people. And Kennedy, in fact, has joined with the liberals on a number of gay rights cases, including Romer v. Evans, which overturned a discriminatory Colorado law, and even Lawrence v. Texas, which overturned laws that used to make basically oral sex criminal.
Right.
They used to put people in jail for that, and so that was overturned as well. So I think it's his libertarian streak. I also think it's his federalist streak, like you say, states' rights. This is a case where the states of Maryland and Massachusetts and D.C. is not a state, but D.C. and New York all decided to give their gay citizens equal rights, and Kennedy didn't feel like the federal government should, just because they want to be malicious, not allow New York gay citizens to have the same rights as New York straight citizens when New York had decided, as a people through their elected legislature, to give them equal rights. He didn't think the federal government should be able to say, sorry, New York, you must discriminate.
Yeah, and you know, that's something we really need to talk about at some one show, and that is, and have some libertarians on, and talk about the difference between libertarianism and conservatism, because libertarianism intersects with conservatism in some areas, and it intersects with progressivism in other areas.
Correct.
I would argue that conservatives tend to pretty much always want to use law to enforce their moral standards, where libertarians tend to want to use the law to enforce their ideological standards. And there is a difference.
Libertarians oppose government almost in any way. They don't want government to help you, and they don't want government to hurt you. So the part about not wanting government to hurt you, that's where liberals and libertarians agree.
Right.
The part about not wanting the government to help you, well, that's where libertarians and liberals disagree, because liberals do want government to help you, but conservatives and libertarians don't want government to help you.
Right. And, you know, you got a lot of conservatives in this country that are calling themselves libertarians, but the true libertarians are not against legalization of marijuana. The true libertarians are in favor of drug legalization and a lot of other things. But that's a whole other story. We'll get sidetracked, and we got big doings here. Next, let's talk about Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. For those of you who don't know, the Civil Rights Act was signed in 1964. The Voting Rights Act, it was 65, a year later, right, Mark?
That's correct.
And
before
basically,
we get to that, Garland, just real quick, I want to, because in a companion case with the Defense of Marriage Act case, the court ruled that basically no one could challenge California's decision.
Oh, yeah, explain that.
Made same-sex marriage illegal. So the people of California voted to make same-sex marriage illegal. According to the California judges, that was against the Constitution. And the Supreme Court did a nice little jujitsu move and said, the people who supported the proposition couldn't go and appeal further, because basically the governor of California said this was unconstitutional, the attorney general of California was unconstitutional, and basically the Supreme Court said if California officials won't enforce marriage inequality, then we're not going to step in either. So the roughshod of it is a very technical procedural opinion, but the roughshod of it is that California will become the 13th state, along with D.C., to have marriage equality. And that'll be about 30% of the United States population in about 3 months.
Very interesting. Okay, things are changing.
The Voting Rights Act, because that was a terrible decision.
Now let's talk about the Voting Rights Act. And just to throw a little bit of info in there for you those who didn't know, 64. And a little background. When the Martin Luther King and the Civil Rights Movement were fighting for both, of course. And there were those who told Martin Luther King, no, don't go for this. If we can't get both, if we can't get the civil rights and the voting rights all in one, don't accept it. And Martin Luther King said, hey, I'll take what I can get. And he took the Civil Rights Act, and the next year they were able to go back. So there are always those who are ready to say, if you can't get the whole ball of wax, don't get it. But what's important about Section 5 is, in my opinion, Mark, tell me if you disagree, what's important about Section 5 is this. If there, prior to an election, there are laws passed that seem to discriminate against minorities, whatever the case may be, that suppress the black vote, things of that nature. It allows you to challenge them, and it provides a pathway for them to be reviewed, challenged, and possibly struck down before the election, so that these discriminatory actions don't affect the election. Whereas now that they've gotten rid of it, you basically, if these things happen, you have to sue them. The election happens, the people who are discriminating win, and a year later, the courts come back and say, you know, as a matter of fact, that was illegal. Am I pretty much?
Yeah, you're
straight on.
Yeah, Section 5 was called the preclearance section. And what the court said, it only applied to certain states and localities. They weren't all in the South, by the way. They were mostly in the South, but it also included places like Manhattan and places in Ohio and New Hampshire and Utah. And it included anywhere around the country where it could be shown that discriminatory laws were passed that were designed or intended or had the effect of discriminating against minorities and where minorities had very low rates of voting. For example, in 1964, only 6% of African Americans voted, and that's because Mississippi did its best to keep blacks from voting.
Yeah, right.
And Mississippi joined the list. What people, a lot of people don't know about the list, and this is a really important thing, is that if you didn't pass any discriminatory laws in 10 years, you automatically got off the list. Because the whole argument the Supreme Court was making is this was made in 1965, and yeah, okay, Mississippi was racist in 1965, but, you know, that doesn't mean they're racist today. This is an old formula, and even though Congress in 2006 reauthorized the exact same formula by unanimous vote in the Senate, an overwhelming majority in the House, including, by the way, by Alabama's two senators and Mississippi's two senators and so forth, even so, screw Congress. They don't know what they're talking about. It's an old formula. Throw it out and do it over. But what the Supreme Court didn't take into consideration is the obvious fact that if you didn't discriminate for 10 years, you got off the list. New Hampshire used to be on the list. New Hampshire didn't discriminate in 10 years. New Hampshire was taken off the list. So the fact that there was already this great little mechanism in the law.
A probation, in fact. A form of probation, you could argue.
That's exactly right. And Shelby County, Alabama, the county that was at issue here, had actively discriminated just 3 or 4 years earlier by gerrymandering its lines in order to kick out a black councilwoman. There were four people running the county. There were three whites and one black, and they redrew the lines just to make sure that it'd be four whites. They did that 5 years ago. That was struck down by the Justice Department by this preclearance standard, exactly the way it should work, and so they lost. And now they want to discriminate without preclearance. And the irony is, if they just had kept their nose clean for 10 years, then they wouldn't even be on this list.
But they knew they couldn't. They knew they couldn't. And you know, let's not gloss around this, Mark. Let me give you an example. Let's say the National Bank Robbers Association started a movement to outlaw armed guards in banks. And they said, you know, they violate, the Constitution. We don't need, armed guards in banks. In fact, banks shouldn't even be locked at night. Well, you could suspect that the National Bank Robbers Association was doing that, not because they felt this was in the best interest of banks, not because they felt that banks were safe, but because they wanted to get rid of those guards to make it easier to rob banks.
Sure.
My point being, this is the National Burglars Association. You've got southern states saying who during the last election passed laws that were found to be unconstitutional and suppressed the votes of minorities during the last election cycle, saying we don't need anything to stop that. My gosh,
right.
We'd never do it. So
most
it's
most of them were actually photo identification laws.
Right.
Now let's take your analogy one step further, Garland. So, you know, you could say, one of the things the Supreme Court said in this case was they pointed out that in 1976, the Justice Department struck down like 65 or so discriminatory laws, and it's gone down a lot since then. And in 2012, there were only 16.
Only 16.
And in 2013, there was only one. Of course, not many elections in 2013. Most elections occur in even numbered years. But so they said it's gone way down. You know, it's not so necessary anymore. To me, that's kind of like the bank robbers saying, you know, there's been a lot of armed guards in banks, and bank robberies have gone down. So we don't need the armed guards anymore.
You're right.
The answer is because the statute exists.
Precisely.
There are less racist laws on the books. That's true. But the fact that there are less racist laws on the books doesn't mean you get rid of the armed guard. It doesn't mean you get rid of the Justice Department. It doesn't mean you get rid of the watchdog. It's precisely because the watchdog is there that we have less racist voting practices. And so to remove the watchdog, to me, just means that racists and people who aren't necessarily racist but understand that African-Americans and Latinos might vote for the Democratic Party and they want the Republicans to win, so they're not doing it so much because they hate black people, but more because they hate how black people vote and they want to rig an election. But to me, whether you're doing it because you're actively racist or because you're willing to accept a racist standard in order to get your way, you know, there's not much of a distinction between those.
Well, you know, I heard a guy the other day over at Fox. I was on Fox of all ungodly places the other day. And I heard one of the guys are making the argument. There was no intent to discriminate. There was no intent to, you know, when he was asked about these recent laws that were thrown out because they suppressed the black vote, and he was arguing with Juan Williams, and Juan Williams said these were racist. And he said, no, there was no intent to suppress the black vote, and there was no intent to racism. And it's something that you and I have discussed before. Who cares? See, there's an issue here. I would have made this point. I don't care what the intent was. I care what the effect was. To right. See that you can always have an argument over intent. I wasn't trying. We're not talking about criminal law. In criminal law, you know, intent is paramount. We're talking about constitutional law. Many times in constitutional law, particularly in race discrimination cases, you only have to show a pattern. Generally, with race discrimination or discrimination cases, you have to demonstrate a pattern of discrimination, not a pattern of intent. So when these people argue we weren't trying to discriminate, well, that's fine. I'm okay if you're not trying to discriminate. Well, that means I don't dislike you as a person. It's not about that. But whether you're trying or not, the fact of the matter is, you suppress the black vote. And it always irks me when I hear people debating conservatives and conservatives start talking about intent, that they don't just shake them around a little bit and say, well, what if we leave the issue of intent out of the conversation? What if we leave the issue of whether or not a, quote, person is a racist? Everybody's always going to say they're not a racist. Anybody you ask, you can ask a Klansman, are you a racist? Well, no, I'm just a Klansman, but no, I'm not a racist. They're always going to do, because they're going to define racist in a way that doesn't affect them. You know, well, I'm not a racist. I just hate all black people and think they should go back to Africa, but that doesn't make me a racist. You know,
they used to call it in civil rights the disparate impact cases. In other words, it doesn't matter whether the intent was racist or not. If the effect is racist, then it could throw them out. Now, the Supreme Court, unfortunately, has scaled back a lot of those cases. But well, I want to focus on one thing, because, Garland, there actually is some intent. I mean, you're right, it shouldn't be necessary. But when Pennsylvania passed its photo ID law that made sure that basically if you were wealthy and or middle class, you're fine. But if you're poor, a lot of those people don't have photo IDs, and they made it very difficult for them to get photo IDs, then you weren't going to get a chance to vote. The Speaker of the House of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives or Delegates, whatever they call it, said, this is going to cause us to deliver Pennsylvania to Mitt Romney.
Right.
Okay, now that, he didn't say we're going to keep those blacks from voting. He didn't say that. But basically he said that the effect of this, which keeps blacks from voting, will be to deliver the state to Mitt Romney. He didn't say that about which part. But the point is, the intent was to make sure that voters don't vote.
Right.
So whether or not it was because he wanted Romney to be elected or because he secretly, you know, wore a robe to Klan rallies, it had the same effect. And one thing I just want to say this. When you and I and Terry Kester did the Raucous Caucus, you and Terry, I remember, argued vociferously that these laws were going to, you know, harm us and were going to cause Romney to win the election. I said, nope, don't worry. I really did. I remember. I said, don't worry. Because of the Civil Rights Act of 1965, the Justice Department will never allow these things to go through. And I got to say, I'll brag a little bit. My prediction was right. In state after state after state, in South Carolina, in Pennsylvania, in Ohio, in about 14 states, the Republicans tried to do these discriminatory voting laws. Each and every one of them was struck down by the Justice Department under precisely the section the Supreme Court struck down just this week. So while I was right then, I fear y'all will be right in the future, because if we don't have the Justice Department pre-clear and strike down, all you can do is after the fact, after the racist election where the wrong people get elected because people aren't allowed to vote,
right. Then
and only then you can sue and the court can wag its finger and say, bad guys, you shouldn't have done that. And then what do? Before the next session, maybe they switch it slightly into a new discriminatory law. And then after that election, they wag their finger. Bad guys. There's no monetary penalty. It's just like, don't enforce that particular law for the next election. You could every 2 years pass a new racist law, and all you can do is after the election, after only the whites vote, for example, then they say, sorry, you shouldn't have done it that way. It's a terrible decision by the United States Supreme Court.
Absolutely. And, you know, my argument was not that there was an intent. I think clearly there is intent. Obviously there was intent. But my position was, for the sake of discussion, when you discuss this issue, the issue of intent, for those who are, you know, when you're talking with somebody who is defending this, you know, when you're arguing with someone who's defending this and they utilized the intent, there was no, if I didn't intend to kill Mark, then he's not dead. You know, if I didn't intend to blow up the building, then it's still there. So they argue intent. My point is, the argument against that is always the same. Okay, so there was an intent. I'm fine with that. Let's talk about what actually happened. So we agree that, let's agree that it suppressed the black vote. And I will give you the intent and say, okay, if you say there's no intent, I'm not going to argue that there is. As long as, first of all, we agree that it suppressed the black vote. And second of all, let's discuss whether or not that's what we want to do in this country. But we already know that's what they want to do.
They wrote in the opinion was that they pointed out that actually African-Americans voted in greater numbers than whites in many of these southern states. And that's true. They actively voted for Obama and so forth.
But it's not relevant.
But the standard shouldn't be the actual vote. The standard should be whether you have a discriminatory practice in voting that causes certain clear segments of the population not to vote. I'll give you one that's got nothing to do with race, and that has to do with students. Many Republicans don't want young people
right.
to vote for the same reason they don't want blacks to vote. They don't want young people to vote because today young people are overwhelmingly progressive, overwhelmingly liberal, something like 2-1 supporting Democrats over Republicans. That's not true for older voters. It is true for that voting segment 18 to 25. The trick is for 18 to 25-year-olds is many of them are in college, and many of them are in out-of-state college. And frankly, the kids that go out-of-state to school tend to be more liberal than the kids that stay in-state to school. So what a number of legislatures did is they said, well, we're going to say that you can't vote in your home state, the state where you're from, unless you do it in person. And you're out-of-state in college, unless you're going to fly in on Election Day, which, as we all know, is a Tuesday in November. It's hardly during vacation. Unless you fly into your home state, you can't vote. And, oh, by the way, you can't vote in your college state either because you're not domiciled there. So, you know, if you're a kid from California going to New York University, you can't vote in, well, actually, these are blue states. Actually, probably in red states because the red states are good. If you're an Alabaman going to school in Ohio, you can't vote in Alabama because you'd have to fly in to do that. And you can't vote in Ohio because Ohio says, nope, you're just here a college student. You're not really resident here. The long and short of it is you can't vote. You just can't vote. You can't even vote absentee because they won't let you vote absentee. You have to vote in person because I guess they're afraid of fraud or whatever excuse that was. The point is this has nothing to do with race, but it's intentional discrimination against a subset of voters, in this case, out-of-state college students, designed to keep them from voting. And the answer is we shouldn't have policies designed to keep any section of legitimate voters from voting. If you want to keep, you know, illegal immigrants from voting, okay, they have no right to vote. That's fair. But American citizens have a right to vote, whether they be 18 or African-American or actually some of these discriminate against the elderly. Some of them discriminate against people who don't drive. The answer is everyone should have the right to vote, period. And what the Voting Rights Act did is, sure, it helped African-Americans, but it also helped Latinos. It helped young people. It helped the elderly. It helped any group of voters which a state might decide to discriminate against. And it's just a shame that this is gone.
Yeah, and again, you know, your point comes back to this, what you said earlier. It's like the National Bank Robbers Association saying, look, there have been so few bank robberies with these armed, now that you've put armed guards in front of every bank, you need to get rid of the guards.
That's right.
You don't need guards anymore. There's been a few bank robberies, not mentioning the fact that the only reason that there has been fewer bank robberies is because of the guards. It's amazing. Let me give the number out for someone who might want to call. We're starting off with this. We've got plenty more to talk about. 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893. 89.3 WPFW here in Washington, D.C., 89.3 FM, and WPFW.org. That's WPFW.org, streaming live online, 202-588-0893. You talk with Garland Nixon and Mark Levine. Right now, we're going to move to other things, but right now we're talking about the Voting Rights Act. And the fact of the matter is this, Mark. The fact of the matter is that there is a reason that they focused on the southern, mainly on the southern states. And I would make the argument that to some extent the judges were right. It shouldn't be. It really, based on what we saw in some of the other states, yeah, it shouldn't be focused only on the southern states. Really, it should be spread to every state.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, when you think about it, the main supposed argument of the conservative justices, the five conservative justices, and this was a 5-4 decision, their argument was it's unfair because it's applied to some states and not to others. So, all right, I accept that. You know, if you have something applied to some states and not to others, that seems unfair, even though, to be fair, the states on the rule had all actively discriminated in the last 10 years, so they wouldn't be on. But you know what? If you've got a problem, then the answer is you either strike it, which is what they did, or you simply apply it to every state. And I think a perfect solution is, okay, you don't want states to have the stigma of being considered a racist state for preclearance. Just simply allow preclearance for every state, because no state should discriminate against voting, and that's fine. And if Massachusetts or Maryland don't discriminate, then they'll never have to worry about it. And if you know, Alabama does, then fine. Just apply it to everyone.
Right. And you know, and what, and when the reality is we're not discussing the real issue. The real issue, and we already know it, the real issue is that those who are challenging who were challenging Section 5 weren't doing it because they were now, you know, they were repentant and because they no longer discriminated and because they thought they didn't need it. They were challenging it because it was impeding them from discriminating now. It was impeding them from doing this, and they did it so they could get out the way. In fact, the next day, of all places, figure this, Mississippi and Texas began the process of reintroducing some of these same voter ID laws that were tossed out in the past. So the fact of the matter is, and I said this before, as soon as the law is thrown out, which I felt it would, as soon as Section 5 is tossed out, they're going to demonstrate why it needed to be there in the first place. But the fact of the matter is, the five guys on the Supreme Court who voted in favor of it were, you know, charter lifetime members of the National Burglars Association, based on it. Okay, so we've got somebody here on. I think it's Ramey. We've got Ramey. Give us a second here.
Before you bring Ramey on,
okay, go ahead.
One quick thing to bring both cases together. Uh-huh. I think this content question that you mentioned, Garland, is a real important one. In the gay rights cases, it's interesting because the dissenters got very angry at the progressives and Justice Kennedy because basically they cited the 1996 Defense of Marriage Act, which talked all about Judeo-Christian moral values.
Yeah, right.
Talked all about they wanted to express moral disapproval of homosexuality, and basically the statute clearly said they wanted to discriminate.
Right.
And the censor said, well, no, you can't just believe the people who voted for it and said they wanted to discriminate. Just because that was in the report on the legislation as a reference of the legislation doesn't mean they want to discriminate. I think it's horrible that you call these people they intentionally want to discriminate. So in both cases, there's this feeling that when people are discriminated against, whether they be gay people or African-Americans or anybody else, that don't call people bigots. It's not nice to call people bigots, and it's not nice to have laws that prevent discrimination, because laws that prevent discrimination are unnecessary because no one's really a bigot.
You're right.
And it's this idea that it's just that form.
It's
a bigot. It's rude. It's rude. So we really don't need these laws to protect them.
And it
was interesting. It's in both cases you find that kind of language.
Eric. We got Eric? We got Ramey. Ramey, welcome to WPFW.
Hey, Mark. Hey,
what's happening?
I'm not sure. I could be wrong. I don't think you guys are on the air. I'm not picking you up on either receiver, but I got you on the stream. But
really?
Yeah, I'm not picking you up at all.
Well,
but
Bill Weatherspoon should be checking that out.
We may be off the air. You say? I don't know. There's a lot of storms going on around here, and
yeah, I've not picked you up. I could be wrong, but I've got you on the internet. But in any event, I don't think the voting rights case, in terms of the Supreme Court, I don't think it had anything to do with merit. I think it was strictly politics.
Oh, yeah.
And I think
they
decided, well, we gave them 2 out of 3. We gave them Obamacare. And if there's a choice between giving them the right to vote and affirmative action in college admissions will give them the college admissions. I don't think it had anything at all to do with merit.
You are on the money. We got to take a quick break here. But you're listening to Garland Nixon and Mark Levine. This is WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington D.C. We don't know if the storm knocked us off the air. We're certainly hoping it didn't. But if you're out there, we're still on WPFW.org streaming live. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back here, hopefully on the air, but if not, we're at least streaming live on the internet. We've got some nasty storm. You still there with us, Ramey? Let's hope the storm might have gotten Ramey too and knocked him off. So let's hope he's okay. But at any rate, Mark, you still there? Oh, wait a minute. You there, Mark? All right. I thought the storm had given. Ramey's gone and we may be off the air. I thought maybe, you know, you got struck by lightning out there too.
I'm still here and the weather's beautiful where I am. I'm actually on vacation here.
Oh, okay. Great. Great. Well, lucky you. Well, we're here and there's, you know, torrential downpours and thunderstorms, which is pretty much what we get all the time because, as you know, Mark, because, on occasion listen to right wing radio, climate change is a hoax, right?
Yeah, that would explain, nine of the 10 hottest years were in the last decade.
Yeah, that had nothing to do with, it's all a hoax, Mark, I think you're making that up because you want to cost the, big corporations money. But,
I think I'm part of the mercury lobby because the mercury keeps going up and, I'm just making that up. The scientists who measure thermometers, who measure weather, are all secretly part of the progressive lobby paid for by George Soros and so forth.
There we go. We've got Ramey back. We lost him for a minute. Sorry, Ramey, you only got about 30 seconds before the break. So where were you? You were saying you had said your opinion is that it's all about politics. And I think, you know what? Really, I think everyone, the conservatives, of course, can't admit it. But I think everyone on all sides knows this is simply about getting conservatives elected when they no longer have a majority either in race or in ideology or in moral beliefs and opinions. People don't agree with them anymore, but they want to control things anyway. And the only way they can do it is to shift the electorate in a way that they're the only ones that can vote.
To the Supreme Court. Nobody wants to talk about it. The Southern anger is still there. The ropes are not being thrown over the trees. Castrations are not really taking place, not physically. But those states, those Southern tier states, the voters have all jumped ship and gone Republican. Just about Alabama, Mississippi, you name it. Oddly enough, as we talked about a few weeks before, that's where Obama won the election was in the South, but he run the Democratic primaries. But that anger is still there. And I'm not sure why anybody hasn't discussed or brought the 2000 election up in terms of Florida, where they made a concerted effort to go into the black precincts and disenfranchise voters there.
Yeah, but if you remember something, Mark and Ramey, that wasn't in writing in law. You know, they did a lot of kind of underhanded things that they were able to do without, you know, like blocking them. See, there are other things that they do. When they can't write it in a law, they'll take machines out of the areas and they'll have them in longer lines. They won't have enough machines, won't have enough people to process it. They'll do a lot of other things, you know, everything that, you know, put up cones across the street so they can't drive. And I'm sure that's happened also. But so when they can't do it, officially, administratively, they find other ways to do it in the South. We're still talking about mainly in the South, but other places too, in conservative areas.
Yeah, well, back in when Earl Warren was first appointed to the court, he replaced a guy from Mississippi, you know, a confirmed card-carrying bigot. And they had no idea what Earl Warren's politics were. you know, until he had actually gotten there. You know, and Eisenhower actually called him to the White House and tried to strong-arm
him. It wasn't Berger, was it?
Say again?
Was it Berger, Mark? He didn't replace Berger, did he? It was Berger after Warren.
No, Berger came after Warren.
Berger came after Warren.
But anyway, he tried to strong-arm him over this Brown versus the Board of Education thing. And then, you know, and Earl Warren revolutionized, I mean, thinking in this country. And then the Republicans came, and Bush, and they started talking about activist judges. Now, if these aren't activist judges we have now, I don't know what is. It's just a different type of activism. But I think it was solely political. It had nothing to do with merit. They said, we'll give them one or the other. I think they preferred probably to have race included as a factor in higher education.
Thanks a lot, Eric. And, you know, Mark, you know, I'm with his point, and I think it's, you know, it's funny to listen to conservatives discuss this as if it's really about some legal administrative position. It's almost like when you listen to the conservatives talk about the issue of voting fraud. You know, it's it's almost like saying, you know, Mark, we've got to pass some laws to stop all these unicorns from running across the street. People are hitting unicorns. People are being killed. Their cars. We have to have laws to get these unicorns out of the street. But unicorns don't exist. Well, yeah, but that's not important. Huh?
You have a better chance of getting struck by lightning twice than you do of finding a case of voter fraud. There's been some.
And run over by a unicorn, I might add.
Well, that's true. I mean, there's been less than 10 in all jurisdictions of the United States for more than 200 years, and most of them were found innocent. I mean, I'm talking about every state, every locality, every dog catcher election, and every municipality. The reason why voting fraud doesn't happen is really quite simple. It's about cost and benefit. You know, if you rob a liquor store, yeah, there's substantial cost. You might get caught. You might go to jail. But, hey, you're getting a bunch of money for it. The cost benefit, I mean, the benefit of voting is you get one vote toward getting your candidate. And although you and I and everyone tries to encourage people to vote, we recognize that individual voter has relatively little sway. But you risk going 5 years to prison to get one more vote for your candidate. That's just not a risk that any sane person would take. And it's interesting, in every voter fraud case there's been, and like I said, there's been less than 10 or 200 years, you've actually been dealing with a mentally ill person, which makes sense, because there's actually more rational reasons for murder than there are for voter fraud.
Right.
Which is why murder is more common.
Yeah, and what is it really about? This is really about, I mean, if you get down to the baseline, it's really about a what I call a warped, but they would call a moral view that's totally different. An example, it would be the other Supreme Court finding that granted broader rights to gay people. This is about conservatives believing that their moral standards, which include a hierarchical system, certain people, should expect more rights, a greater number of rights, because of the station that they were born in life, and those that who were born at a lower station should accept the level of rights that they get based on the station they were born. It's about a hierarchical system of rights, which bad news for you, Mark, people like you and I are at the bottom of the list, and we probably wouldn't get any rights at all, but for any number of reasons. But And it is about these people saying, as an example, if you listen to conservatives, they'll say, but why don't we've got to explain to black people why conservative, or as Rick Santorum would say, blah people, we've got to explain to blah people why the conservative ideology is in their best interest. That's kind of like the noble lie. The conservative ideology is in the best interest of blah people. They're just not smart enough to know it. So we're doing it like the old noble lie. We're doing them a favor. Actually, by suppressing their vote. Because they can't vote, they can't put these Democrats in, which will make things worse for them, and they'll be better off if we stop them from voting so that we can institute our moral values. And then, you know, everything will be light and fluffy, kind of like a, you know, a downy toilet paper or something, you know, white cloud, whatever it is.
When you think about it, the affirmative action case that barely got out by the skin of its neck. I mean, Eric Ramey mentioned it. There is still affirmative action in this country, but I got to tell you, I don't think it's for long. I think that Eric is maybe right. They didn't want to strike down the Voting Rights Act, which, you know, there are only two pillars of the civil rights movement. There are a lot of wonderful things that happened. You can talk about Rosa Parks and the bus and the march across in Selma and then Martin Luther King and the March on Washington. But all of those were actions taken by activists great thing, definitely set the stage for it. But when it comes down to legislation that actually legally changed people's lives, there's two pillars right there. There's the Civil Rights Act of 1964.
Yep.
That's the one that said that you couldn't discriminate privately, that blacks and whites had the right to go to the same hotels, same movie theaters, same restaurants. That was crucial and vital and still exists, thank God. The other was the Voting Rights Act of 1965. That they struck down, in effect, the heart of this pillar is extraordinary. And I actually agree with Eric Ramey. I don't think they wanted to strike down affirmative action in the same term. But I got to tell you, I think it's coming.
Well, look, with that,
if it happens in a year or two or three, unless and until one of those conservative justices retires or dies and Obama can appoint a new one, unless that happens, I think affirmative action is let's just say 2 or 3 years away from ending.
If you have a moral worldview, as conservatives do, that equality is not the natural order, then affirmative action or anything that creates equality would be wrong. They generally, the conservative worldview is that the natural order, the God-ordained natural order, is one of hierarchy. That's the argument they used during the Civil War for slavery. God has ordained this natural order where we're supposed to be here, and then the woman is below us, and then this person is below us, and the black people, they're not even on the list. You know, they to get to them, you've got to get a shovel and dig 10 feet down in the ground below the list to find out where they are. So the right wing view is one of a hierarchical order, and anything that creates equality, you know, particularly for the blah people, is going to be dismissed. I think we've got Tesfa. I know, let me give the number out. We've got time for more calls. 202-588-2. Let me give the number out. Tesfa. 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C. Garland Nixon and Mark Levine. I'm on every Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. And right now we've got Tesfa. Welcome to PFW, Tesfa.
Good evening, my friend.
Good evening, Tesfa.
Cornish citizens and Supreme Court justices cannot be a guarantee for your rights. What guarantees your rights is an active participation of the citizens. We can see and we have heard about the Constitution of the United States all around the world. But the justices could be real justices or could not be real justices and could be political and activist as the one in office right now. For example, the court became forgetful that there was such a disagreement over election in 2004, and there was an uproar about suppression of voter votes. A year ago, 4 years ago, they could be forgetful intentionally and politically that now they want to get rid of laws that guarantee the participation in voting. And the only way out of this problem is there are chances where Supreme Court justices could be really angels. There are times when Supreme Court justices could be as activist as the Tea Party itself. The only guarantee for the citizen is active participation by the citizens.
Thank you very much, Tesfa. That's a very good point, you know, and that's a point we've tried to make here, and many of the hosts here at WPFW make regularly, and that is, you know, whether or not we have we even have rights or privileges. You know, there are those like me who would argue, I don't even know if we have rights. We've got privileges, but the fact of the matter is, without activism, you have none of the above, and one of the issues that we have now, one of the reason that what semblance of rights we may have at some point had, or at least believed that we had falsely, is falling apart, is because nobody's going to take to the streets, nobody's going to, you know, people won't do anything anymore. Mark, what do you think about Tesfa's, what I think is a brilliant comment about the correlation between activism of the people and the rights that we, or privileges or whatever that we have?
Well, I would have liked to have seen a mass march. I would like to see the NAACP or the
any of the organizations that date back, the Urban League and so forth, I'd like to see them call on a march in Washington to reinstitute the Voting Rights Act. So Supreme Court says you can't pick and choose among the states. Fine. Simply have Section 5 available to every state and every locality. I do still think there are ways to do this. It will require activism. I sometimes worry. I mean, it's now we're approaching 50-year anniversaries. It's interesting. I think they did it the 49th year because they didn't want to kill these legislation in the 50th anniversary. So here we are now. 2014, 2015 will be the 50th anniversary of these pillars of the Civil Rights Movement legislation, the Voting Rights Act, Civil Rights Act. And I would love to see marches commemorating those acts and basically pushing Congress to reinstitute those acts. The interesting thing is maybe because Republicans don't want to be called racist, I don't know, but for whatever reason, in 2006, not that long ago, 7 years ago, the Congress almost unanimously reauthorized the Voting Rights Act. I told you, the vote was 98-0 in the Senate. That means every Republican and every Democrat voted for it. Two simply didn't vote. It was overwhelming in the House. If there is mass activism of the kind that Tess and you were talking about, Garland, I don't think that's beyond us. I fear sometimes that because there's no Bull Connor and because people are being, you know, hosed down in the streets and because racism, while still existing, is a little bit more undercover, a little bit secret than you know, lynchings or literacy tests and so
right.
forth, that there's just not this feeling, this strength that they had in the civil rights era. And that's a shame because I don't see many leaders like Martin Luther King or Rosa Parks or that generation. I don't see too many of them anymore. Malcolm X, I would love to see a new civil rights movement, a new class of civil rights leaders that recognize how far we've come. I'm not saying that they pretend that we're living in the 60s. We're not. But at the same time, we still have a long way to go. And one of the best things I think they could argue for is a Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act applying to every state and every locality, because the right to vote, you know, that presupposes all other rights. I mean, we can have strong arguments about Obamacare and Walmart and how much workers should be paid, minimum wage and health care and all these things that affect people's lives. If you don't have a right to choose your own leaders, then the whole system is invalid, because you could choose your leader to support minimum wage or health care and so forth. But if you can't choose the people who run your government, then democracy is dead. So I say voting rights is the absolute first thing. And I would love to see, and I would definitely attend, a march on Washington for voting rights.
Yeah, I agree. Before we go, we've got a few minutes left here. But before we go, I've got to bring up something. And I think it is related. Because of my beliefs about the heart of the Republican Party lying in the southern in the gray states, Paula Deen, I got to throw that out there.
Right.
What's interesting about Paula Deen was this, that she made, and I don't think it's just related just to the Section 5, but also to the issue on the DOMA finding. It's related in this manner. What I find interesting about Paula Deen, not interesting, but of note, remarkable, is that when initially when she was asked about saying the, you know, alleged N-word, the N-word, her answer was so matter-of-factly. It was like, well, you know, have you used the N-word? And she almost said, doesn't everybody? You know, it was like, huh? Yeah, of course. What are you talking about? What kind of idiot are you? Yes. You mean there's people that don't use the N-word? And it was a reflection to me. She's a Georgia woman. She's cooking with grits and greens and all kinds of Georgia Southern stuff. The food that she cooks reflects a very, very southern menu. And the callousness with which she uses the N-word to me reflects a very southern cultural kind of racist that we don't identify as a strongly southern culture. Not that it's isn't other places, but that it's so much a part of the southern culture. When it's, as I said, it's not just racist, it's sexist, it's homophobic, it's all of the above. But I think we don't discuss that, and I think that's where the Paula Deen issue kind of falls in line with these other two findings. What are your thoughts on that, Mark?
Well, I don't know that I agree with you, Don. I'll tell you.
Oh, that's right. You're from the South.
I am from the South.
I don't trust you, Mark. You're probably a Klansman. Oh, sorry, I got a little carried away.
That's exactly right. Yeah,
right. A Jewish Klansman, I don't think that's going to work.
They hated Jews as well as black.
You're right.
So here's the thing about Paula Deen. So I heard what, you know, was said that she said, and I wanted to know more carefully. So I read the entire deposition because I wanted to get it in context, because I know how easy it is to take things out of context. And I found very interesting just discussions of Southern culture and so forth. I think first let's start with the N-word, okay? So now listen, let me say this. It appears, based on what limited evidence I have, that her brother may have done some awful things and may have been actively racist and so forth. I haven't studied that. I don't know whether Bubba Dean is racist or not. He may be. But obviously you can't say that she is because he is. That's
right, right. We're just talking about her, yeah.
Right, right. So he, because the allegation is that he would hire and fire based on race and so forth, and if that's true, then obviously the plaintiff should win their lawsuit and so forth. But for Paula Dean, the question was, have you used the N-word? I want to talk about use of that word. Because using it, there's a difference between saying it, I would argue, and using it, all right? If a white teenager is repeating the words of a rap song, it's not very pleasant, but they're not using the word in a pejorative fashion. They're repeating it probably, you know, in a way that that they shouldn't do, but it's not. I think there's a big difference between even discussing the word or, you know, reading Mark Twain, for example, Huckleberry Finn, and using it pejoratively to describe a black person.
It's about context.
I just think it's about context. That's a distinction. And so I just want to make very clear that when she talks about the word, she makes it clear that she never used it pejoratively, except in one instance, when a black man robbed her and she was a bank teller and held a gun to her head, and later on she was telling her husband about it, and she used the N-word. Okay, you know what? That's still not something I would do. I might say, you know, that jerk, or use very strong language to describe someone who held a gun to my head, and do so because that person is, you know, an awful person. I might call them a bastard. I might use words I don't use on the radio. But their race isn't why I'm mad at them. I'm mad at them because they held a gun to my head.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that one instance, there really was nothing in the deposition to suggest that she had used that word actively. And so I don't know. I kind of felt a little sorry for her, but I guess.
But then there was the allegations were, of course, that she had used it in a much more pejorative. Not that we know that they're right, but that she had used it in a much more pejorative nature, shall we say? But look, right now we've got Chris on the line, and we've got to bring Chris. Welcome, Chris, to WPFW, and we sit with bated breath, awaiting for you to correct us on all our errors.
Hi, how you doing?
Wonderful.
Hey there.
Good. We can hear you way out here in Clinton and Waldorf and all of us. I know somebody called in and said that you couldn't get you on the radio. I'm in the car stuck in traffic listening to you guys.
All right.
Well, that's good. That's bad that you're hearing us.
And you haven't shut the radio off. You're still listening. So that's a good thing.
About the Paula Dean thing is the undertone thing of it, as far as most black people are concerned, we don't want white people to use it at all. You know,
I agree with you. I would
don't have a past, use it indirectly, intensely, unintentionally.
You're right.
Whatever. Now, we cannot forget this woman did grow up in the South.
Yep.
I got cousins from the South.
Yep.
And working down on the South one summer, you know, working at a sawmill down there, it was a Home Depot type place. You know, the white dudes were just throwing it around and like it was nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And then I come to them. I'm from up north. I'm from up top. And I say, hey, you know, what's the matter with y'all? Y'all just, he's like, oh, man, that's the way I was raised and everything. I don't mean nothing by it, but that's just the way I describe them. So I say, you describe all black people like that? He said, pretty much. But in his intelligence level, his ignorance, I wanted to get mad, but then I could not get mad because that's the way he was taught, and it was perpetuated because he's going to teach his next child.
It was part of the, as I always say, it was part of the culture. And let me just say one thing when I say about talk about Southern culture. Distinctly, there is a white Southern culture and there is a black Southern culture. You know, there is no question. You know, when you hear people say, you know, defend the Southern battle flag, the Confederate flag, and they say, oh, it's about our heritage. Oh, no, no, no. What do you mean our? I'm black. My mother was from down south. It ain't about her heritage, buddy. It's about the white heritage in the South. The Civil War wasn't really a Civil War. The Southerners did not want to control New York City. They didn't want to take over the government and control the North. It was a war for white Southern independence. It wasn't for Southern independence because the black people in the South did not want independence from Abraham Lincoln. It was a white Southern Indian. And so we have to acknowledge that when you talk about these kind of things and we use Southern culture, we have to be real here and say this is about a white Southern culture that's distinctly different from the black Southern culture for very obvious reasons. Mark.
Let me say this. I grew up in Nashville, Tennessee.
Uh-oh. You're a suspect, Mark.
I am.
You're a suspect. I'm telling you, buddy.
It's interesting because as a Jewish person, sometimes I was considered a white person and sometimes I was considered not a white person. So I've had an interesting way of seeing it from both sides. I certainly had certain upper crust WASPy people in the South not consider me of their ilk.
Right.
Occasionally I have been included. In any case, there's no question. Let me just say this. There's no question that there's a certain group of white people in the South that casually throw that word around as if it's nothing. I remember a woman that at the Bridge Club, frankly, that I used to play in, who used to casually throw that word around. And it got to the point, and I would tell her, I don't want to hear that word. I don't want you to use it around me. You know, I'm not black, but I didn't want to use that word around me. And finally, every time she used it, I'd get up from the table, and I would just leave in the middle of the game until she understood that she couldn't use that word around me. And I think white Southern culture is slowly changing for the better.
Yeah, well, I'm sure when you walked out of the room, she had a kind word to say about Jews, no doubt. Yeah, you know, when you weren't around, there were probably a few terms used that you may not be too thrilled about, my friend.
That was how I passively resisted her racism.
Yeah. Well, Mark, you know, we talk about this, and the fact of the matter is that there is a consistent struggle, I think, from people who believe, as opposed to the right wing, people like you and I who believe, or progressives, people on the left who believe in universal rights, that everyone, regardless of their, you know, sexual orientation, regardless of their age or their race or whatever the case may be, really has the same rights. And it even goes back to, you know, and freedoms with Roosevelt. It even goes back to, you know, I think people have a right to things like food, you know, and a roof over their head and things like that.
You know, people are people, and everyone should have an equal right and an equal chance.
Yeah, and that's what we believe in, and that's what we're fighting against. Realistically, we're fighting against a culture who doesn't believe that at all. You know, they don't believe that, and they think that their moral, that their position, you know, is the correct moral position. One where, you know, as Rick Santorum would say, blah people and gay people and all the other, the ones that they would consider undesirables should accept their lowly lot in life. And I just don't think that's going to happen. Those days are behind us, Mark.
No, I think so, too. I got to tell you, I think that if Pauline Case teaches us anything, is that no one should be using the N-word. And by the way, I include blacks in that as well. It's much, much, much worse, to be fair, when a white person says it. It's just it's an ugly word, and I think we should retire it to the history books.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of people that agree with you. And here's what I'll say again. It's always about, as George Carlin said, words don't mean anything by themselves. It's all about context. Who, what, when, and where. But at any rate, if somebody wants to get in touch with you, Mark, how could they go about doing it?
Go to my website, marklevinetalk.com. You can follow me on Twitter at marklevinetalk. That's MarkLevinetalk. You can also find me on Facebook and like me and do that there.
Okay, and of course, if you want to get in touch with me, number one, if you want to hear some great talk, just turn on WPFW 89.3 FM every Friday from 6 to 7 p.m., and hopefully you'll learn something, you'll call in, hopefully we'll learn something, but we will all have a good show here on News Views. If you want to get in contact with me, Twitter is at Garland Nixon. Garland is G-A-R-L-A-N-D, and of course Nixon, just like the president, and I-X-O-N. I am at Facebook, Garland Nixon, so I'm on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, which I don't do much with LinkedIn, I don't know, but I don't use it. If you want to email me, you can just email me at garlandn@gmail.com. Thanks a lot, Mark. Next! Now, you've heard some great talk shows. You've heard Democracy Now. You've had an opportunity to call in. You've heard News Views. You've had an opportunity to call in. Next, we have some really good music. We got Robin Holden and Carol Tyson. And they've got Robin's Place. And if you think this was a good show, let me tell you, all we're doing is we're just warming up the mic for them. Then now comes the real good quality stuff. But we enjoy it. In the background, one of my favorite songs, Shaz, a great jazz keyboardist. I don't know. It's kind of a jazz club. I don't know what it is, but jazz is pretty awesome. That's one of my favorites. So that's my outro. So next is Robin Holden and Carol Tyson. You're going to love this. Listen to some good music. I'm out.
Public Affairs or News Program. As a listener-sponsored community radio station, WPFW appreciates your feedback, whether favorable or otherwise. To provide your feedback, even if it is regarding one of our many music programs, simply email us at info@WPFW.org. That's info@WPFW.org. Thanks.
WPFW Washington.
Out of the tree of life, I just picked me a plum. You came along and every